Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, podcast audience. Hey, back with you on this Tuesday night, 7:30. It's Ken Hodge and Robert Frost. We take time to ensure you're not in the dark when it pertains to injury compensation. How you doing this evening, Robert?
I'm doing well, Kenny. How about you?
I'm doing great. You know, it's funny. About a week and a half ago, there was a accident in the postal property involving a mail handler and a contract driver. Do you know no one knows about that? No one, everybody in the post office, not one person have I heard even speak of that. I just think that's very peculiar, man. I don't know, for somebody to be taken out in an ambulance, and I'm pretty sure that driver is not aware that he's entitled to injury compensation, or I hope someone who knows him and hears his podcast makes sure he's informed of that, because very important, especially if he's a contract driver. I'm sure his boss don't provide injury compensation. So if anybody knows that driver, you might want to tell him at least look into the possibility. Check with postal management to see if they should cover that injury.
I can update you on that, Ken. His boss is aware. The post office is going to pay his medical bills. As far as injury compensation for therapy and whatnot, that does fall, my understanding, under his boss's injury comp, which his boss does have.
Okay. All right. That's what's important then. And again, however, they're providing injury compensation services to him, if that takes care of his issue, then that's what we do here. We try to keep you informed on things of this nature. Is that Brother Smith I see on the phone line with us tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. Yes, Brother Smith is on.
Well, I says, hold on, man. Let me play your theme music, man. Let me cue up some theme music for you. Hey, welcome back, my brother. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to be back. I know I've been out for a few weeks here, man, but we're glad to jump back on this evening and actually coming live here in Austin, Texas. And I'm actually at the Department of Labor Federal Workers Compensation kind of training summit that they have annually, man. So a lot of good info. Thought I'd jump on here and bless you guys with a couple nuggets that could be useful for everyone on the call.
Hey, you got the mic, brother. Do what you like.
Well, appreciate it, man. Well, the first thing I will say, and I'm not going to lie, I was a little kind of astonished and taken back. Out of the several hundred, you know, folks that are here and the different agencies that are represented across the country, agencies, man, to be honest, that I've never even heard of, I'm a little disappointed of the representation from the Postal Service, man. It's not a lot here. I mean, literally, I can probably count on two hands. And so, obviously that's some good news and bad news, man. I guess the good news is that folks are working and can't get here. But the bad news is there's a lot of information that is being disseminated here that isn't, being received. And for an agency that deals with so many injuries, on an annual basis, I would have just thought it would have been a little bit more representation to kind of spread that word. But the good news is I am here, and this podcast is here. And folks like, Mr. Hodge and Frost here are doing a great job of consistently providing information. And so I'm just glad that that I can be a resource and a vessel, man, and try to give you as much knowledge as I can, and that's kind of what we're here for. So, again, appreciate the platform. Appreciate, guys, what you guys are doing. Just keep it up, man. But I apologize in advance. I'm outside. I had to step out to jump on. And so if you hear a little background noise or what have you, please excuse me. I apologize in advance for that, man. But a couple of quick things that I really want to, just some really high-level topics and nuggets that I want to give you guys that I think would be really, really good. The first is we're getting word of some changes that are happening, OWCP and Department of Labor, that are coming into effect if they haven't already taken effect here recently in the last couple of months. The first is they restructured claims examiners for claimants and for employees that are injured in filing a claim. They restructured the process. They restructured divisions. And so for claimants that have multiple claims moving forward, the claims examiner, you'll have one claims examiner covering all of your cases or claims. All right. So, now no longer, if you've got three or four claims, you don't have to call three or four different claims examiners and try to figure out the status of each and where it's at in the process. So moving forward, one claims examiner will be tied to one claimant for all of their claims. In addition to that, one claims examiner will be responsible pretty much to manage your claim from beginning to end. So in the past, they had different divisions in different stages in which your claim may be passed to different claims examiners. And now that's been changed where one claims examiner kind of manages your claim from beginning to end. So whether it's decision, adjudication, payment, closing a case, whatever, it all will be managed by one claims examiner. So what that has, what they're boasting has allowed to happen is, number one, claims are being adjudicated and decisions are being made much faster. So for CA1, they're really trying to get that timeline down to 45 days or sooner to adjudicate those claims. And then CA2s, they're trying to get those adjudicated within 90 days. So, of course, it may go a little over, but that's their goal. That's their timeline. So it obviously speeds up the timeline and then also decreases error and deficiencies and mistakes that may happen with cross-communication between, multiple examiners. So I thought that was a really good piece, man, that the Department of Labor has worked really hard on restructuring the governance and divisions and the folks that are handling the actual claims. And then another piece that I thought is coming down the pike that's really good that I think would be helpful for all is the Department of Labor will be soon putting out a list of network providers, a managed network provider list. There is a list or access in which you can find providers currently, but that list is somewhat out of date, and it's actually not managed by the Department of Labor. That's actually managed by their contracted out to Conduent, who handles a lot of their billing, and so that's who manages that list. And so in the past, Department of Labor couldn't actually provide you with any list of providers or make any recommendations. Obviously, you can go online and search through that Conduent website, but like I said, a lot of that's probably 2 or 3 years old, right? It hasn't been updated in a while, and so now moving forward, I think in the top of the year, Department of Labor has said that they're going to have their own managed network provider list that will hopefully increase the number of providers, because as we know, they're far and few in between to find a provider, find a good provider, in your area. So this will hopefully increase the number of providers, giving the employee the right, obviously, to select who they want to see for their medical care. So again, just a couple high level nuggets, man, that I thought should certainly help and aid the employees, man, as they're looking for providers, filing their claims, and help them get to a decision and get the medical care and treatment that they deserve to get them back to work.
Hey, Brother Antonio, just a quick question. Why is it so hard to find providers? What does the Department of Labor require from doctors that make doctors not want to be on their provider network?
Well, it all boils down to a lot of providers. Number one, they don't know the process. So Department of Labor, unlike, you know, private insurance, you know, they make it public of what you must do to bill and, you know, what must go into any documents and narrative and the billing codes and the fee schedule and all those things. Well, Department of Labor actually does not have that information publicly. And so oftentimes the doctors just, quite frankly, don't know what to do. They don't know how to send in the proper documents. They don't know how to construct narratives the right way or what the Department of Labor needs to see. And so at the end of the day, they're not getting paid, right? And so as a provider, if you're not getting paid, you know, why take the risk and time to go through this process and jump through these hoops when I'm not at the end of the day going to get paid? So at the end of the day, they just don't know what to do and how to get paid. And it's actually not that difficult. And obviously that is something that we provide to providers, showing them, you know, actually how to enroll, how to get set up, and how to get paid and the process that goes along with that. But at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, man. They don't know what to do, so they can't get paid and they're not going to jump through the holes. And then, also the Department of Labor, obviously their fee schedule is lower than, you know, fair market value or what you may get from private insurance. And so, you know, just sometimes providers don't want to deal with it, you know, to get paid less. So either they're getting paid less or they're not getting paid at all. And a lot of providers just would rather not deal with it.
Okay. I mean, if I'm in business to make money, I can understand the, if you're going to pay me less, I don't want to do business with you. I mean, I kind of get that whole business concept, but you would think that if it's the Department of Labor, again, that maybe they would, I don't know, I'm just speaking off the top, relax some of their guidelines. Would that bring more providers in? I mean, you know, because again, one of the main things we have in Columbus. See, we're lucky in Columbus because we have Elite Medical. And they have an injury compensation, Dr. Manfresca, on site. So in Columbus, we're kind of lucky or unique. But a lot of people, that's their biggest headache, just trying to find someone that's a OWCP doctor. And the fact that it's that hard to find, something's got to be wrong in the system.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, with this new network provider list that they're planning to enroll, I think a part of that is on how to properly enroll and, you know, provide some of that information and education on what they must do to, you know, be in compliance and obviously get paid. So I think that's a big part of it because that's what's been lacking. You know, folks, these providers just really don't know. They don't know what they don't know. And instead of, you know, taking the time to research and taking the time to go through all these hoops, they just say, forget it. I'm not doing it. And that's why you go to, you know, most of your doctors, your family doctor, a lot of, you know, they don't take fed comp. Like, we don't do it. It's too much. We just don't do it. We don't have the time. We don't have the resources, the manpower. So we're just not going to do it. But, you know, it's not that difficult once you know what to do and how to do it. You just got to go through it to learn it, you know.
One thing you said, and I really held on to, with some of the changes or talked about changes coming from the OWCP, that single point of contact, man, you know, that's got to be a major benefit to claimants because most of the time, and again, I only speak about the agency in which I work, because your first claim wasn't handled properly, usually it leads to extenuating claims, other claims. So when you have a single point of contact, somebody who can follow your case, not just this case, but previous injuries and see how that all links together, I think that should be a major benefit for individuals injured at work. I really do. I think that's super to have a single point of contact.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'd be super helpful as well, man. So I'm excited about that for the claimants, and I think that'd, you know, change the game from speediness to accuracy and across the board, man. I think that'd be a good deal.
Yeah.
I'll share one other quick nugget, man. You know, CA1 versus CA2. I know we've talked about it on this call. I know you guys have covered that. If you need to figure out exactly the difference between a CA1 and CA2, I'm sure you can go and check out some of the previous podcasts and gather that information. But one of the things that I've taken back in the interpretation from coming to this conference has opened my mind a tad bit. A CA1 versus a CA2 traumatic injury versus a CA2 occupational disease or injury is the fact that a CA1 being an injury that occurs and classified as, you know, kind of one work shift, one work day or one work shift, that is essentially how they are classifying a CA1. Traumatic injury, typically it's, you know, you come in contact with another object of some sort, but it's something that happens one work day or one work shift. And the interpretation as it was kind of shared and disclosed at this conference has kind of brought some light and opened my eyes to CA1. And so my point in saying this is almost to the fact that if in doubt, look at potentially filing a CA1. If a CA2 is necessary, from what has been shared, now not all claims examiners, because every region and district operates a little differently, but from what I've gathered is that instead of how they may have done it in the past, where say if you filed incorrectly, say if you filed a CA1 and you should have filed a CA2, instead of just denying you and making you, you know, go through the appeal process or just refile, you know, filing another claim, oftentimes the claims examiners will make the change and convert it kind of on the back end, right? So if you file a CA1 and should be a CA2, the claims examiners, you know, will go through their process of what they're looking for and convert it. But from what I've gathered as far as the definition and how they're explaining and what they're accepting as a CA1, I believe that more claims will fall under the CA1 jurisdiction. And I give a perfect example where in the past, if a potential claimant will come to me and say, hey, you know, I was lifting this box and, you know, I felt a strain in my shoulder, I would in the past may have advised them to file a CA2 because more of an occupational, hey, you know, it's something that has persisted over time. You know, you've been lifting these boxes, you know, 8 hours a day for the last 20 years, and your shoulder is starting to wear down. And on this particular day when you went to lift, you know, you felt, you know, a sharp pain in your back. I, in the past, would have, you know, maybe educated a client and, you know, said, hey, you may be better filing a CA2 versus a CA1 because you may get denied filing a CA1 and go through that whole process. After this training, that same scenario, I would now probably advise the claimant to file a CA1 because it's an injury that has happened in one work day or one work shift. Secondarily, hey, if you file a CA1 and it turns out that it is actually a CA2, well, then the claims examiner is just going to convert it anyway. So what's the fault, right? The only caveat, the only downside, right?
No, I hear you. Go ahead, brother.
Okay. I was going to say the only caveat or downside to filing a CA1 when you, it may be in the gray area, you're just not 100% sure, is the continuation of pay. Where, you know, as a CA1, you have the opportunity to select continuation of pay and receive benefits if you're out off of work. And if it is downgraded to a CA2 or if it's denied, well, then obviously that continuation of pay could be requested to be paid back. So that's the only downside that I see. You know what I mean? As you file in a CA-1 and it's questionable and it may be a CA-2. But other than that, my thought is, hey, look, if it's in the gray area, file a CA-1 and let the Department of Labor convert it, you know, or just
hey, brother,
accept it. So
let me say, Brother Smith, let me jump in there and tell, inform all my postal audience. If you do receive continuation of pay and your claim is downgraded, let me help you out. Not maybe. they're coming to get their money back. Trust me and believe me. They may not come that week, but yeah, a long period of time is not going to pass where you don't start getting letters that they're going to take that money back. So just know that.
Yeah. So that's the one thing I will be mindful and be careful of, but you know, that's definitely something that has changed my mindset and perspective on a CA-1 versus CA-2. And obviously, you know, we understand the difference between a CA-1, CA-2, and the benefits, you know, almost instantaneous benefits with a CA-1 versus a CA-2. It may take some time to get that adjudicated and approved before you can, you know, receive any medical or compensation benefits. And the last thing I'll share, man, that I'm sure, you know, I know you guys know, I'm sure it may have been covered on this, but it's always good to have a frame of reference. And that the Department of Labor, even though they're the ones that are responsible of issuing out payments for medical and or lost wages or compensation, at the end of the day, those monies are actually being paid by the actual agency. So Department of Labor and OWCP issues those out, but essentially they basically just have access to your agency's checkbook, and your agency is at the end of the day paying out those monies. And so just keep that in mind when, you know, that's the reason why sometimes, you know, upper management and supervisors may, you know, be given some pushback, because at the end of the day, it's coming out of the agency's pocket. And, you know, just frame of reference, frame of mind to keep that in the back of your mind. You know, Department of Labor, they're paying it, but it's coming out the agency's, you know, pocket at the end of the day.
See, you know, and I think most of the audience, well, you had to know that, because if not, the agency wouldn't give you all the nonsense they give you when you are injured at work. But one thing I'll say to that, as far as it coming out of the agency's pocket, if the agency, and in this case, again, I only speak about the agency to which I am currently employed, the post office. If they cared about paying that kind of money, they would become very serious as far as safety programs and understanding and implementing correct safety programs that reduce the possibility of you becoming injured at work. But they don't. But then they care about having to pay on the other end. A totally different podcast. Sorry, I went off on a little rant, but I'm back.
Well, and I'll point out something about that as well. Right, the agency pays workers' comp, this insurance, so that when you're injured, workers' comp pays you. When they send the bill to the agency, there's a 15% markup.
Yep.
The worker, so the agency is actually paying an extra 15% when you're injured for your pay.
See, and again, just understanding that that scenario, you would think that if I'm the agency, I would rather have you come to work and just sit in the work area than allow you to stay home, and I'm going to pay you. It's going to end up actually costing me 15% more. And if I bring you to work and put you in a work environment that is in line with what your doctor limitations are, you can motivate or help rehabilitate yourself and maybe have a faster return to work. That's what I'm talking about an agency who really cares about the employees. So when you understand it, they're going to pay additional, I don't know. I would rather spend my additional making sure I have better safety procedures and safety policies to make sure I'm doing everything I can to minimize any possibility of you having an accident. And I do say minimize because you're not going to eliminate.
Absolutely, man. Quick fact, 106,000 new cases were created in 2018, and over $2 billion was issued for compensation, and over $900 million was issued for medical services. So the one thing that I did gather from this, even though sometimes Department of Labor can be challenging, the people that are here representing the Department of Labor and leading the conferences and presenting, they really seem to care about the employee, okay, and trying to put the employee first. Now, I get sometimes it doesn't seem like that when we are trying to get our claim approved and they're asking us, you know, 100,000 questions and going against, you know, contrary to what we're saying. But for the folks that are here that represent Department of Labor and OWCP, it definitely seems like they are they want to be on the side of the employee, get the employee back to work, man, get them their benefits, and they have a right to. And so just take that with a grain of salt, kind of for what it's worth, frame of reference. Obviously, every case is individual cases are unique, and on a case by case basis. But at the end of the day, it seems the most of the folks that are here truly care about the employee, man. And so that was reassuring. And it felt good to know that. So, well, I can't tell you, brother, for having me. Yeah.
Okay, I can't tell you, Brother Smith. Again, you went away for a minute, but you came back with mad gifts, man. I mean, you came back breathing on the mic. Giving us something to look forward to. And again, man, I hope you have a great time down there. And again, I'm so fortunate. We're so fortunate that you are a part of Elite Medical. And we're fortunate because it's located right here in Columbus, Ohio. Again, full medical injury compensation, injury compensation doctor on staff, rehabilitation services. Again, if you are, and I hope nobody ever has to visit you, Brother Antonio, but if you ever get injured at work, find out about Elite Medical and carry yourself on down there, and they'll take care of you. They'll manage your health care.
We'll do the best we can, man. Well, I appreciate you guys. It's hot here in Austin, Texas, man. I'm trying to get in some water. I'm trying to jump in the pool. But you guys have a great rest of the day,
hey.
And we will talk to you soon.
Hey, appreciate you stopping by, Brother Smith.
All right. Bye-bye.
Wow. So, hey, that was Brother Antonio Smith out of Elite Medical giving us an update fresh from an OWCP Department of Labor, I guess, training environment. And some of the things he talked about, again, is going to be very beneficial. We talk about a single point of contact, claims management, claim management that stays with you from beginning to end, trying to reduce the time it takes to process claims. We talked about the Department of Labor actually trying to provide a network provider list, which should be awesome, again, if they keep it updated and do what they say they're going to do. I mean, he gave us a little dollar figure as far as $2 billion were spent on compensation money, and $900 million was actually spent on services. So the Department of Labor actually spent more money on compensation claims than they did on medical services. Listen, that's it for my show tonight. As always, I thank Brother Antonio for coming on and sharing that information with us. And again, I say to the audience, we're here every Tuesday night, or most Tuesday nights, trying to bring you quality conversation. feel free to call in. It's a live podcast. And if we can't answer your questions, believe me, we are connected to a network of injury comp specialists that will join us, and you will get an answer. So from Hodge to Hodge podcast on Blog Talk Radio, this is co-producer Ken Hodge saying good night.
This is Robert Frost saying good night. Thank you for joining us.